Good evening. So, Jiryu scheduled to speak tonight, called in sick, and so we switched places, so he'll be here hopefully next week. And I thought I'd talk about the precepts body tonight, this body that practices precepts. I came here to Santa Cruz Zen Center to seek liberation for my suffering. And after a period of time, I realized that this practice allowed me to participate in liberation throughout the universe, my own liberation and the liberation of all beings. And since that time, I have really joyfully done this dance of liberation and compassion that our practice sets out for us. And one of the pillars of practice, my practice and the practice of Buddhism, is the practice of precepts, the ethical teachings of Buddha. The precepts, along with meditation and wisdom practice, support my practice. They support the temple. Like a lot of things in Buddhism and Zen in particular, these three pillars of practice have a lot in common. They have their own flavor, and they are also unified. They are the mind and body of Buddha. In our ethical practice, in our meditation, in practicing with emptiness, we loosen our grip on the individual self and look at our interconnectedness, practice with our interconnectedness, our unity, and in doing so, dance with that liberation of the one and the many all at the same time. These ethical teachings of the Buddha have a familiar ring to them. We practice not killing, not stealing, not lying, etc. And they can be looked at in several ways. And on one level, ethical teachings are a way to get along. Initially for Buddha's band of monks to get along, not clash, to promote that harmony and accord in the community. But the precepts are also a path to liberation from suffering. And as I said before, they're about loosening that grip on the self, taking the self a little less seriously, looking at the big picture. We watch the self arise in this practice. We watch our picking and choosing, our likes and our dislikes. And we see how this self is either promoting discord, the opposite of accord, the opposite of harmony, or we can see how this self is arising as a hindrance to the our liberation of ourselves or others. Suzuki, I've read this before. It's a nice look at the precepts in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. Our original mind includes everything within itself. It is always rich and sufficient within itself. You should not lose your self-sufficient state of mind. This does not mean a closed mind, but actually an empty mind and a ready mind. If your mind is empty, it is always ready for anything. It is open to everything. In the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. In the expert's mind, there are few. If you discriminate too much, you limit yourself. If you are too demanding or too greedy, your mind is not rich and self-sufficient. If we lose our original self-sufficient mind, we will lose all precepts. When your mind becomes demanding, when you long for something, when you desire something, you will end up violating your own precepts, not to tell lies, not to steal, not to kill, not to be immoral, and so forth. If you keep your original mind, the precepts will keep themselves. So this original mind, once again, includes everything within itself. It is always rich and sufficient within itself. It is ready for anything. It is open to everything. It's receptive. It's not a mind that meets the world with a fixed opinion, with a strong sense of self that's figured it all out already. It's this open, original, flexible, receptive mind. There are several approaches to practicing the precepts that lead to liberation of self and others, that lead to the mind and body of Buddha. There's, you know, a good way to just jump in with the precepts is practicing them pretty conventionally. How do I practice not killing? How do I practice not taking what isn't given? How do I practice in the world truthfulness and not telling lies? How do I not slander? We can just kind of look at our behavior. Again, it really is the practice always of looking inward and identifying this self that's acting in the world. But you can just go down the list of these precepts and ponder for yourself, how do I practice this way? How do I not kill somebody's spirit, or literally not kill other beings, or not lie or slander? one could look at, you know, before this list of 10 grave precepts, the conventional ones, there's the three pure precepts, which really kind of support our bodhisattva practice of saving all beings. These three practices of embracing and sustaining right conduct, or another translation is embracing and sustaining ceremonies here at the temple. Another one is embracing and sustaining good or wholesome activities. And the third one is embracing and sustaining all beings. And of course, those three pure precepts also include the next 10 grave precepts of not killing, not stealing, not lying, etc. So another way is to focus on those three pure precepts, liberating others, creating accord, becoming Buddha, becoming the mind and body of Buddha. Another liberative way to practice precepts, or maybe in the ultimate reality, is that, as I said in the beginning, the other pillars of Zen, meditation and wisdom practice, our meditation practice that we just did last week. Dennis.
Susan, regarding the part embracing and sustaining ceremonies, mm-hmm. I remember reading that the ego can show in having a problem with that, but also it shows in embracing too much.
The being upright.
Being upright.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was kind of thinking that it possibly means, and I might be wrong, part of the ego, or maybe a little bit of it is good.
Yes. A little moderation, the middle way is our path. I think in terms of ceremonies, one way to look at that, why we're encouraged to participate in ceremonies, is about the ceremony that we did Monday evening, all of us circumambulating and chanting, all of us going up two by two and offering incense in a synchronized way. I think that's an activity of not so self-focused, but participating in a harmonious group practice. I think that's why ceremonies are underlined. Is it too, like I was just going to say about Zazen, that we just sat here all together, as thoughts arising, letting them go, not holding on to that tight grip of a self, but letting the thoughts go and getting back into our body and breath, and participating in this activity with the group. I think ceremonies have that same function, but a little more active. That practice over and over of letting go of those thoughts is carried with us throughout other activities after zazen, our communication with others, the activities that we do in the world, where we're not holding on so tightly, where we're greeting the world in the way Suzuki described, with that open, flexible mind. And I think that too is the mind that's exercised in the ceremonies that we did the other evening. And in a wisdom practice, when we can actually, you know, greet those closest to us, you know, can we see all of the many complicated elements in our own mother that rather than, you know, first seeing that, you know, many decade relationship that we've forged together, can we see the many decades before we even came along that impacted our mother? Can we see all the causes and conditions of the phenomena that appears in our world? You know, our glasses that have so many other conditions than just being glasses for us to read sutras. You know, if even that would be enough, as they say in other traditions, but as a matter of fact, these glasses have a lot more causes and conditions to bring us these glasses than just us. So can we practice seeing the emptiness, the complicated causes and conditions of all the phenomena around us, so that we're all liberated, so that we're not all just lockstep into, you know, these are just my glasses, but all of them, can we liberate these glasses from just being mine? And that, to that end, we're practicing the precepts completely. We're practicing wholesome actions. We're practicing with all beings. We're practicing not stealing, not lying, not killing. And then I wanted to look at the body that practices precepts. Just last week we did the full moon bodhisattva precept ceremony, where we remind ourselves about the precepts and about our vows to practice ethically with all beings. And it's done with a ceremony of bowing and chanting that lasts about a half hour. I was doing the chant leader, the Kokyo part. And at the end, Kokyo gave me a nice thank you, a nice compliment, joked, Patrick, it looks like you've been doing that ceremony for 20 years. And of course I had. And you know, I realized that it's just, that ceremony is just in my body. I really like it. I like the song. You know, I like chanting with others. I was talking about it with someone else, you know, who said, you know, it's true. You can hear everybody's individual voice, you know, you can hear the voice next to you, you can harmonize with the voice next to you or behind you, but you also have the experience of this whole room, you know, chanting and bowing, focused one after another on all the 16 precepts, on the generosity of all the ancestors. We do some homages to many of our ancestors and forebears. We confess the limitations of our practice. And we're doing this all together. So it's just all right in our body. And I know it's, you know, most of us have done it several times. It really dwells in the body. There's a real rhythm set up by the Doan and the instruments that the Doan uses, and the body gets into that rhythm of bowing and singing. You know, what an ancient thing it is for us to sing and dance together as humans, and it's the same. And Buddhism, you know, leapt right in with their own singing and dancing with ceremonies like this. Zen literature talks about leaping beyond. So we've got lots in this practice that looks like just sitting. We've got leaping and dancing and bowing and singing. And we do it over and over. It really becomes a part of our body. Part of this is the family style, it's called. This is our family style, and it's not so different from the other tribes, you know, just down the street at Holy Cross, with their singing and dancing. You know, I think we really practice the precepts with the body when we do this, the precept ceremony. I think that's another part of all the ceremonies that we do, that include chanting and bowing and working together, creating, as the psalm says, this joyful noise of practicing together as one body, and then appreciating the individual bodies and voices that are part of this practice. You know, a lot of people have sat up here and talked about Zazen and said how much they've learned about their bodies with this sitting practice. Here we all are with our straight spine. In fact, Tenshin Reb Anderson, you know, his book on the precepts and Buddhism in general Zen in general is called Being Upright. We've got this practice of upright sitting and following our breath, holding our hands and arms in a mudra, and paying attention to the body as we sit. Where does ease reside in this posture? Where does discomfort arise? How do we bring attention to those areas of discomfort in our bodies as we sit here. This practice of dropping body and mind starts with a close examination of this body in Zazen. And as I talked about earlier, this practice of Zazen is none other than practice in the body of the precepts, of accord, of the path of interconnectedness and becoming the body and mind of Buddha. And then to take even a more longitudinal view of this body, we've got the practice of Sesshin that we just finished on Monday. 5 days of sitting together, mostly interspersed with that beautiful, Kokyo talked about the beauty of our eating practice, that great ceremony of sharing a meal together for the benefit of all beings. We eat together and we practice with our food and with our bodies. And of course, Sesshin includes many ceremonies, services where we chant and bow together. And we get 5 days of dwelling in this body, seeing how this body is practicing liberating ourselves and others, practicing in this posture that's the posture of Buddha, the body of Buddha. Suzuki told us about original mind and its practice of the precepts. Suzuki goes on in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. The very next chapter is this posture, is this body, not separate. The practice of the precepts of becoming Buddha, of being Buddha, is this body and mind practice, open, receptive, flexible, ready for anything. Any thoughts about practicing the precepts, practicing with the body, sitting Sesshin, becoming Buddha? You know, where does all of this start? Of course, it starts with an intention to mix like milk and water, to create harmony in our in our speech or our actions, not to create discord. So all of these body practices, all these sitting practices, help us sustain the mind and body of harmony and accord. So we can head it off at the pass is one method. Then taking a look at what do you do with, how do you feel in the body when you're about to say something? First, can you look at the person you're talking with and saying, this is my teacher. This is the one who's going to liberate myself and all beings. And so how can I address him or her right now? That might help things along. And then, if it's already out there, if the arrow has left the quiver, where do you feel it? In your own body, and how quick can you make amends and practice the confessing and vowing, not to create such discord again. So that's where I'd go with that. Charlie.
So you haven't gotten all 10 great precepts to the end, so maybe we could hear all 10.
There's the not killing, not taking what isn't given, not misusing sexuality, not lying, not intoxicating self or others, not slandering, not praising self, not being possessive of anything, not harboring ill will, and not disparaging the three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha.
And you also, you may have mentioned there were 16, and there were 15 pure, so probably the last three.
The bodhisattva precepts of saving all others, saving all beings.
Thank you.
Thank you. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way